Welcome in to the FWFB Football Podcast. Joining me tonight, Colin Weatherwax and Ray Kuhn. How we doing, guys?
Good, Mike. What about you?
I'm good. I'm, of course, Mike Alexander on Twitter at @roto_wan, W-A-N. Colin, what's your Twitter?
I'm at cweatherwax13. I don't tweet near enough, not as much as you, Mike.
You and my wife agree on that. And Ray, what's your Twitter?
Ray_Kuhn_28.
All right, so we got some housekeeping out of the way there. Of course, you can find lots of great info on friendswithfantasybenefits.com, at Fantasy Benefits on Twitter. And football season is here. You know, we sat down and did the draft breakdown a little bit ago. I did a free agent recap last week, so you guys can go back and always listen to those if you're looking for information on specific rookies or free agent landings. We'll talk a little bit of that here coming up. We're also going to talk about some, you know, kind of general roster construction and player type things in the middle of the show, and then we'll wrap up with a bit of a toss-up on Julio Jones, because he's been polarizing this season. After a bit of a disappointing year, and disappointing, of course, depends on framing, because he still scored a lot of points. But we'll get to that. All right, best balls. You've definitely heard of them at this point if you're listening to this podcast. You may have done some, you may not. I'm going to give you just kind of a quick breakdown so that we're all on the same page. You're drafting on one of a couple of main sites, either myfantasyleague.com, which is now rolled into FanBall, and they're calling them MFL10s as that product, or Draft, or FanTrax. There's a few others out there. Each kind of one has a little bit of its own flavor. MFL10s are kind of the standard in best balls. The 20 rounds, you have quarterback, running back, receiver, tight end, defense. Draft is a little bit different. There's no defense. Fantrax is pretty similar along the lines of MFL10s. Different payout structures, of course, too. There's, you know, the typical payout is 100 to first and 10 to second if it's a $10 entry fee. MFL10s have kind of opened that up in the last couple of years. They've got what they call a 2X league, where the top five spots just double their money, get $20. I've seen 75, 2010, I believe, or maybe 3010. As kind of a new product where you get a little bit for third, you're making at least your entry back. And on MFL10s, the biggest advantage is they're having an overall prize this year of $10,000, I believe, for the top scoring team across all of their, hundreds of best balls. Maybe even thousands. I'm not even sure how many they do total in a season, which is a pretty cool thing and kind of funny. One of the main best ball guys out there, Broadway Tom. He was the overall technical champion last year, and he tweeted out, can we get that retroactively to 2017? Because $10,000 would help out a lot. But so that's the premise of a best ball, format wise. Your best lineup is automatically started. There's no roster moves. There's no ad drop. There's no decisions on who to start, who to sit. Really, that's the draw of a best ball is, for me, a couple of years ago, they replaced mock drafts. You get in these mock draft rooms, you got one guy who's just trolling people. You got another guy who never comes off of auto draft, another guy who just keeps turning off auto draft, even though his timer expires. And there's just no value derived out of half of those mocks. So you put $10 in, you put a little stake on it, and all of a sudden you're getting some really valuable data. You're getting to see ADP, that actually means something. You know, you're going to have the fear of loss come into play on players that are on your short list, things like that. So, you know, for me, that's a huge part of it. You know, at this point, I'm having one going at all times until heavy redraft season starts, you know, towards the middle of August. I may even have two going at a time as we get into July there. And I know you guys have also done a couple. What platforms have you played on so far? Go ahead, Colin.
Right now I'm doing the MFL 10s. You know, this is my first year actually doing the MFL 10s. I was the rookie guy that went to Yahoo mock drafts and ESPN mock drafts last year. And like you said, Mike, it's absolutely abomination. I mean, it's basically you against the computer. There's no one falling. There's no steals. Everyone's reaching. I mean, it's insane. So like you said, if you can get into like MFL 10s or the Fantrax or whatever site that has the best ball, definitely do it, because, you know, there is a prize. I mean, there's a reason for you to do it. It's not just, you're bored and there's computers that you have to go against and all that. I mean, this is for real money. So, you know, this is a great way to mock draft, like you said. I have one going on right now with MFL 10s, and, you know, eventually I'll probably have two or three going at a time, just because I'm a draft addict, as y'all know from my baseball addict. So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to try and play with a couple other sites as well. You know, dip my toe in the water on a lot of different platforms to see which one's the best. And, you know, and I'll have different strategies for each one, because, you know, with best ball, it's all about staying healthy. It's all about drafting that breakout guy. And, you know, with a mock draft, it's great.
Right. Right. And, you know, I was so sick of going into, you know, my main leagues after having fired off dozens of mock drafts in the week or two coming up to the real draft, and, you know, just landing my targets consistently and saying, okay, I know I'm going to get this guy in the eighth and I'm going to get this guy in the 10th. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm two rounds off on their values because I'm playing against other smart players.
Yeah, and for that reason, honestly, I think like the last two or three years, I've stopped doing mock drafts just because I didn't think there was any value in it. To me, I found more value in finding the NFFC data, the ADP data, and kind of basing my plan and my strategy off of that. And again, I've completed one best ball so far over on Fantrax, and I'm a little more than halfway through in the MFL 10. Like you guys said, I think I'm just going to keep on rolling this all the way through up until redraft season, because first of all, it's nice to put a little stake in the game. I mean, you figure law of averages, if you get in $100 on a grand prize, you enter 10, you get your money back at minimum if you win 1 out of 10. I think I kind of like my odds there. Plus, I like the idea of drafting in May and June, because I too have a drafting problem, and it's a good way to kind of jumpstart your prep. Also, I mean, about a week or two ago, I was like, all right. I mean, obviously, I'd follow along with the offseason, had my opinion on guys, but I hadn't sat down pen to paper to say, okay, here's my rankings 1 through 100 or whatever you want to say. I started off by doing these because the other good thing is that you have a 4-hour clock on the slow draft, so it gives you some time to do some research, you know, when your pick is coming up. So it's a good way for me to kind of form my own opinions, my own rankings, without any external biases seeping in there as well.
Yeah, great point, Ray. The 4-hour clock, they even have 8-hour clocks on MFL.
No one do the 8-hour ones. It's an abomination.
You know, it's funny, like the best ball community is like the purists are like, no, it's 8 hours. Like that's what an MFL is. And Scott Fish had tweeted out, because he works with Fanball now, and it's basically the average pick time is identical. You know, everybody's like, that's got to be 4 hours. You know, if anybody takes more than 4 hours, it's too long. Yeah. Everybody makes their picks anyway.
There's once always, in a while. There's always that one guy, though. You know, in every draft, there's always that one guy. And,
you know, but that's part of it. You know, I always laugh when people get so frustrated about the timeouts in the chat room. I'm like, come on, guys, what are we doing here? Like, do you have to have this draft done tomorrow? No, we're just it's an exercise,
right?
So, you know, start a second one if you got to pick that bad. But yeah, and you know, and like you mentioned, Colin, playing across the different formats, there's edges to be gained differently as well. I'll try them all out for sure. You know, I'm a big fan of Fantrax. They've definitely found a niche in the market. And then on draft, you know, you not having to draft a defense, you know, that's a plus. That's always a little bit of an interesting proposition. But like you said, Brett, you know, for the average person who's maybe done one best ball ever or no best balls, and it's like, I want to get into this, 5 to 10 best balls is kind of what I would say your goal should be. You know, you don't want to break the bank. You don't want to invest a ton of money in this because it's a lot like the early days of DFS or online poker. Like, people are finding out about it. They're saying, oh, I want to do that. Like, I think I'm good at that. If you rush in and you're just, you know, doing things willy-nilly and you're not figuring it out, you know, before you do it and as you get your feet wet, you're going to be the rake. You're going to get taken to the cleaners and people are just going to absorb your entry fees. So, you know, start out with a 2x league would be my suggestion. You got better odds of returning some value. You don't have to finish first or second. You can finish fifth. Figure out the ins and the outs of a best ball, you know, the platform itself. You know, the first time people draft on Fantrax that they've never gone there, they're not used to it. They're like, this is weird. I don't know what I'm doing. And, you know, it takes time to acclimate. So that'd be my suggestion. And then, you know, 5 to 10 drafts, you're looking at a $50 to $100 investment. You would drop that on a redraft league in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is going to get you in a much better place for your redraft leagues. You're going to know ADP by heart by the time it gets there. You're going to have a good feel for who the sleepers are, you know. And in all of these platforms, there's sharps out there. There's guys like Mike Beers out there, you know, guys who've been best balling for ages. And you see them, you know, you get in a room with one of them and you see them taking guys a round ahead of ADP, two rounds ahead of ADP. Take note, you know, I pay attention when I'm in a draft with anybody who's a notable name and who they're taking.
Yeah, so one of the biggest things for me for best ball is, you know, we talk about how addicted we are to drafting and how many drafts we actually do throughout the off season, and you know that's scary to the normal fantasy player. But the biggest thing with best ball is it's a set it and forget it. It's a draft and don't worry about it. You know, it's something that you just draft just based off of your rankings or based off of how you're feeling about certain players. And then you look at it periodically throughout the season and, you know, you don't have to worry about making ad drops. You don't have to worry. I mean, the worst thing about it is injuries, and they'll take a toll on your team. And that's just every year, especially with football. And there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, your hands are basically tied. Right. But you don't have to say, OK, well, if I do this many best ball drafts, well, that means I have to sit down on Saturday night and basically stay up all night and set my lineups. No, it's nothing like that. You know,
yep.
And then the other thing that Ray said is drafting early. Drafting early is a great thing to do. I mean, just think about it. If you drafted early, like around this time last year, and you drafted Kareem Hunt as your 20th round pick, I mean, in the best league that I did last year is whenever I drafted, I believe in June or July, and I got Kareem Hunt in like 12th round, and you know he almost led me to a championship. And that's the kind of guy that you get. You know, at this time, whenever, you know, people know about him, you know, there was the injury, which was not expected, but everyone thought that he would overtake Spencer Ware. And if you get that guy at the discount that you get him now, I mean, towards the beginning of the season, he was going in the third, fourth round. So that's a great discount. Right. And you're pairing him with that third, fourth round talent.
Right. Yeah. He went from, you know, teens to, you know, eighth round as people figured out who he was and he got talked up to, like you said, he was finishing up in the third round as the starting running back for the Chiefs. So drafting early, there is some definite edge being able to identify rookies, players who are stepping up. You know, you mentioned Alan Hearns. He's a guy that is in a new place with a new opportunity, and you can get him for practically free. So, all right, we're going to jump in here next to a little bit of roster construction and then just a little bit of general theory on players. The optimal construction of you know, and we're going to talk MFL 10 primarily. That's kind of the default format for best ball. Obviously, you're going to tweak it to the platform you're on, but in an MFL 10, it's 20 rounds. You want 2 to 3 quarterbacks, 5 to 7 running backs, 6 to 9 receivers, 2 to 3, maybe 4 tight ends, and then like 2 to 3 defenses. Obviously, you know, you need multiple of each position to guard against injury, but there's a fine line to walk between where you're investing in a position, particularly tight end and quarterback, and how many you should take. So if you're going to take a top 5 quarterback, you don't really want to draft 3 quarterbacks. I know it's scary. It's terrifying to think, okay, I've got 2 of them, and if one gets hurt, I've only got 1. What if the other one gets hurt? Then I got none. If both your quarterbacks are hurt, you're kind of washed anyway. Having Josh McCown probably isn't going to save that best ball for you. But having a receiver who turns out to be the breakout receiver, he can win you so much more getting into your lineup throughout the other weeks. So that's the first thing that you have to learn getting into best balls. You have to understand what the optimal construction is. And this isn't just theory. This is measured by guys like Mike Beers, Josh ADHD. They put this out on Twitter every year at the end of the year, what the optimal construction was for first place finishes. And those numbers, 2 to 3 quarterbacks, 2 to 3 tight ends, 6 to 9 receivers, and typically more receivers is better. You know, 5 to 7 running backs, typically slightly less running backs is better. You know, 5 running backs is kind of optimal. And you might think like, oh, but like running backs are the best. Like they're the ones who get the ball the most. Right. But on a lot of these platforms, you need 1 less running back. And you're also kind of picking through the running back herd pretty quickly. You know, the starting jobs get taken very early. Even the speculative guys are gone by the middle rounds. So, you know, it's not a position that you can grab guys in the last round typically and have a hope that that guy is going to give you solid value. So you guys agree with that roster construction? Is that generally your target?
Yeah, because I mean, obviously, defense is either one where I'm only taking 2 because obviously I want to make sure that I don't have the same team on a bye. But other than that, they're going to play no matter what, and I'm going to hope that if one blows up, the other one doesn't, and vice versa on the weeks that one's not on a bye. And the other thing for me with the defense is, I mean, even in redraft, I'm always that guy that takes the defense in the last round or the second to last round, and it's going to end up streaming anyway. But perhaps even more so in this format, knowing that there's no ad drops and knowing that I'm doing this in May or June, I'm going to maybe wait a little longer. I think in the one, I took Houston in the 15th round, and then I backed it up with the Chiefs in the 18th round. And I'm kind of just looking for a team that has talent that I think can make some plays on D, generate some turnovers, and I'm not necessarily looking at opponents because obviously we can do strength of schedule analysis and all that good stuff now, but all it takes is one running back blowing their ACL out. I mean, Houston's going to look one way if Fournette blows his ACL out, another way if Fournette gains 2,000 yards. What if Andrew Luck comes back and throws 40 touchdowns, or if Luck still can't come back because he still can't throw a football? So like things like that, we don't. I mean, we could obviously speculate and have educated opinions on what we think is going to happen, but we're not necessarily sure. So I'm going to almost not necessarily throw a dart, but I'm not going to put
And it's interesting you brought up defense because there's two schools of thought on that. You know, obviously, as long as you have a different bye week, two defenses is the minimum. You're going to have a starting defense every week. You know, your defense can't get hurt. It could have injuries to it, player-wise, but there will be a defense eligible to gain points every week for you. So there's a school of thought that says any more than two is just wasteful. You know, get two, you're fine, spend it on other positions. There's also a school of thought that says defense is a extremely volatile position. You should get three or four because there's random weeks that a defense can score 20, 30 points. And, you know, there's not that many players that can do that to begin with. And they're probably very early picks. So, you know, you get a second, a third, fourth defense in the last rounds. These are possible big weeks in the making. So I kind of see the logic in both. I tend to stick more to two defenses myself, just my comfort level. But I try to mix in a three or four defense draft here and there, you know, just to mix it up and see how that pans out. Colin, do you have a preference on number of defenses?
Yeah, the biggest thing for me is something that you touched on is that defenses don't get injured. I mean, players on the defense get injured, but the actual defense will always provide hopefully positive points. I mean, we've seen before where they provide negative points, but I think two is the right number for me. Just like you said, make sure even if you like two defenses, make sure they don't have the same bye week because then you'll just be forfeiting points at that point. But for me, you know, since they don't get injured, I want to be able to, you know, help myself with an extra tight end, with an extra running back or receiver or quarterback as well, because those positions are so there. I mean, all positions on the football field are injury prone, it looks like, you know, in this day and age. So I want to make sure that I am covered on my skill positions, especially whenever one goes down. I want to make sure I have someone who is viable that can, you know, step in and give me half their production so that way I'm not getting a zero. So two defenses is the soft spot for me. I might try three defenses in a draft just to see how it goes. In the draft that I'm in now, Jacksonville went in round 10, which is ridiculous. Don't be that guy. Be like me and Ray and take them in the last round or second to last round because they're so volatile. I mean, you know, we've seen Jacksonville kind of come out of nowhere last year, and they were so dominant. But you know, the Browns could have a couple good games, and you just never know. So I'm on the fence of just writing that lottery ticket towards the end of the draft and taking whatever I can get.
Right, and, you know, you have to develop a comfort level for where you take your first of these different positions: quarterback, tight end, and defense that are solidary positions. You know, you're only going to start one. But, you know, I'm a wait on quarterback guy. I'm not thinking about a quarterback until like the 10th round. Defense, I'm not thinking about a defense until the 15th round. The reason for that is I'm a big believer in value-based drafting. You've probably heard that term before. Simply put, the 15th quarterback of the week is really never that far behind, you know, the third or fourth quarterback of the week, unless there's a giant run of, you know, really good quarterbacks. And same thing at the end of the year, the 15th quarterback on the season is much closer to the third quarterback than, you know, say the 30th running back to the 10th ranked running back. There's a much bigger gap there. So you're going to take your running backs, your receivers early, because you're gaining an edge. Same thing with tight ends these days. You know, the good tight ends that are treated more like receivers do have value. They will outscore by a significant amount the 15th, 20th tight end. But if you're a guy who, you know, you say, I want to get Aaron Rodgers, I want to get Russell Wilson, you know, this is the guy I want to build around, you can get a comfort level for what round that guy goes in, and you can take him. But don't go into a draft without having that comfort level and just being like, all right, it's the fourth round, I'm drafting, you know, Rodgers or Wilson. Let me just pull up their ADP real quick. You know, Rodgers is about 50th, Wilson is about 60th. So you know, you're going to be in the fourth or fifth round there. I would strongly encourage you to not do it before the fifth round, even if you can get into the sixth for one of those guys. Then they're a value. If you can get Aaron Rodgers in the sixth round, that's a bit of a value. You know, Wilson, late sixth, seventh round, that's a value. You're going to have solidified one more skill position prior to that if you wait. And that takes getting used to. So, you know, go ahead and fire off your first best ball. Take a quarterback way too early. Take too many quarterbacks, too many tight ends, too many defenses. And then regroup. You know, look at what you did wrong. Go back out and get it right in your second, third, fourth, fifth best ball. Do you guys also prefer waiting on quarterbacks?
Yeah, I definitely do. In the MFL 10 that I did, I actually did pull the trigger on Wilson in the sixth round. Because quite honestly, I had already had three running backs, two receivers at that point. Didn't really like any of my other options. I took Wilson, and at that point, Wilson was the fourth quarterback off the board. And then in a Fantrax one that I had done, I had liked some of the other intermediate options, so I waited to the eighth round to take my first quarterback. And then at that point, I took Newton, and then I backed it up with Roethlisberger in the 11th round, figuring that, yeah, both are a little injury prone, but I was going to hedge my bet that hopefully they're at least not going to be injured right together on the same week, and both have the propensity to put up big weeks, and hopefully those big weeks come under opposite weeks. And then sort of whether you take two or three quarterbacks, since I had two injury risk guys, I took Andy Dalton in like the 17th round is kind of like that steady Eddie. All right, worst case scenario, I'm going to get some points if both of those guys end up being injured.
Because last season, Roethlisberger, he was almost a pariah. Like, nobody wanted to touch Roethlisberger. Mm-hmm. He made such a great late best ball quarterback. You were getting him as like almost the 20th quarterback off the board. It was late teens by the time you had to pull the trigger on him. I drafted so much Ben Roethlisberger, and the beginning of the season was a little scary. You know, he was saying, you know, I might not have it. The offense wasn't gelling, but he figured it out and finished just fine. Now this year he's kind of back into vogue a little bit. Another guy who's a great example, Jared Goff. Like, Jared Goff was a free quarterback. He was barely drafted, and he ended up being a great quarterback. So those are the kind of guys you just need to pick out, whether it's a narrative. Like, for me with Jared Goff, the narrative was he was a number one overall pick. Jeff Fisher's garbage. He's got to be better than this. Like, I didn't expect to get the year that Jared Goff put together, but I thought he was going to be Andy Dalton last year. You know, give you that usable week on a bye week, a down week, an injury week for your other quarterback, and, you know, was just a nice kind of safety blanket. And you got found value. So, you know, some of those guys for me this year, guys like Marcus Mariota, he had a down year. He's getting drafted a little later than I think he should. Dak Prescott, Derek Carr, these guys disappointed last year. People aren't hot to get them at the moment. Mitchell Trubisky, you know, he didn't have a great rookie season, but he showed some promise, and he's got a pretty good offensive coordinator and coach coming in Matt Nagy. So he's kind of like the Jared Goff for me this year. You can get Trubisky pretty cheap, and he could turn out to have a really good year, mainly based on touchdowns. Any quarterbacks you guys are liking late in drafts at the moment?
Well, for me, my quarterback strategy, I really didn't have any need or any want to draft a quarterback before round 10. And even then, I'm still, you know, looking to make sure, okay, I'm not missing out on a running back, on a receiver, because it's so deep. Matt Stafford is someone you haven't even said yet. You know, Carson Wentz coming off the injury. Jimmy G is flying up the draft boards, but if he's still there. But in the MFL 10 that I'm in now, I got to the ninth round, and, you know, I had four running backs, three receivers, a tight end, so I was kind of balanced. I was like, okay, well, let me take a look at quarterbacks, and I see Drew Brees' name in the ninth round. And I'm like, okay, something's wrong here, so I got to take him. And then I backed him up with Patrick Mahomes two rounds later. So it's kind of the steady Eddie with Drew Brees and the potential breakout with Mahomes. Now, the guy that I'm kind of looking at, to pair as my third quarterback, I was looking at Derek Carr because, like you said, he's coming off of a down year. But I'm also going to be looking at some of the backups, some of the questionable places where, you know, the starting quarterback isn't really good or isn't really safe. Case Keenum, he's shown it a little bit. But maybe his backup will give me something. Maybe Baker Mayfield or maybe a Sam Darnold or someone like that. Just kind of that. The third quarterback I want to be, you know, either a high upside play or a very steady play. It's going to be one of the two. It's not going to be, you know, anywhere in between. So, you know, if I can find someone like that to pair with the Drew Brees and with the Patrick Mahomes, then I'll be set.
Yeah, there's definitely a strategy developing this year with all the rookies coming in of – taking the guy who is the, you know, technical starter and his backup. So in one I've done so far, I took Tyrod Taylor pretty late, and then I got Baker Mayfield in the last round. And that my first quarterback was Mariota. So, I've got the Cleveland quarterback, hopefully, no matter what. And that pairs well with Mariota. You could do the same thing with the Jets. Josh McCown was pretty good when he played last year. He usually is in more recent seasons. You know, he just kind of slings it these days and puts up some points certain weeks. So you could go McCown, Darnold, out in Arizona, Josh Rosen. I could see him taking over for whenever Sam Bradford's knee doesn't feel good, which is usually like game two or three. In Baltimore, you've got Lamar Jackson. Joe Flacco has taken a ton of punishment over his career. That's another spot where, you know, Jackson is a guy who can do it with his legs, and that's always a good thing to have in a rookie quarterback. Who am I missing? There's one other guy, one of the rookie. Oh, in Buffalo, Josh Allen. Yeah.
Josh Allen.
You know, A.J. McCarron is, like, he's basically going to be Andy Dalton. You know, that offense, they want a game manager. But, you know, if you got stuck and just never got a second quarterback and it's the 19th round, you're like, what am I going to do? You could get the two Buffalo guys and you know, make that work.
I get the idea, but I think I would only do that if I got to, like, round 15 or 16 or so. And I was like, oh, wait a second. Yeah. I only have one quarterback. Because I'm not going to take four. I'm not going to roster four quarterbacks. I just don't. With tight ends kind of the way that they are and wanting to make sure that you don't end up with zero or close to a zero there and wanting to try to nab either the breakout receiver, the breakout running back, or just guys that are going to emerge and outperform their ADP, I think the roster space is too valuable to roster four quarterbacks. And, I mean – But then to your point with taking whether Arizona might be the most attractive, but to where you're going to say, all right, I'm going to take Bradford and Rosen. Those are going to be my number two and three quarterbacks. You're also banking on the fact that your number one quarterback doesn't happen to get hurt the week that Arizona has a bye or put up a dud when Arizona
there is some risk there. I'm a little more comfortable than most people, I think, risking a single quarterback in the event of your second quarterback getting injured. For me, especially in a top heavy best ball, you know, payout wise, I'm trying to win it. A good way to increase those odds are to only take two quarterbacks, and hope that you're hitting on both. It's more risk for sure, but, that's something I definitely don't mind taking on. Go ahead.
You know, I would almost rather take that risk with the two than to do the three where you take Bradford, Rosen, and say like a Roethlisberger or Newton or somebody like that. I would almost say, all right, I'm going to take Roethlisberger, I'm going to take Newton, or I'm going to take Breeze and say, all right, these are two pretty good players that should have some big weeks. Let's just hope
they stay healthy. Yeah, it's definitely not a strategy I want to go into the draft with. It's just something you can have in your back pocket if you kind of get a little panicked and say, you know what, I don't like any of these second quarterbacks, or, you know, I really like Tyrod this year, but they said, you know, without Baker Mayfield, he could be obsolete by week three. So I kind of needed to have both, and I like them as a combined Cleveland quarterback.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Ray here. I think I'm going to, with my three quarterbacks, I'm going to get one from each team. I mean, I get, you know, kind of handcuffing yourself with one team's quarterback, but what if both get injured? Then you're only down to one quarterback. So if I could get, we could play what if all day, but, you know, if I can get one from each team, one team's going to have a bad matchup. Possibly two teams might have a bad matchup in the same week. And if, you know, your third quarterback that you drafted outperforms your other two because they are either playing in the snow or they're playing a top 10 defense, you know, instead of having a guy on the bench where I know I don't have any chance of getting any points from him unless the starter gets hurt, give me someone where there's a chance that he could be my quarterback one.
Yeah, good point. And then the last kind of, you know, roster theory thing I wanted to go over this show was, you're going to hear analysts say, like, oh, he's a good best ball guy. What they mean by that is he's a very streaky player, you know, a boom or bust guy. Odell Beckham is kind of he's a little more than a boom or bust guy, but like he'll have huge weeks and then some average weeks. Maybe AJ Green is another guy. You know, he used to be consistent, but with everything going on in Cincinnati these days, like he has his share of bad weeks the last 2 years. So, you know, he's a little bit more of a boom or bust guy these days. Yeah. Devontae Adams right after him.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones, Mike, and Ray had told me this whenever I told him I drafted him in my best ball, was Tevin Coleman. I mean, you know, there's going to be weeks where if him and Freeman are healthy, then you have to start Freeman, right? But, you know, Coleman could break off a long run, or Freeman could get hurt, which we saw last year. And having him in a best ball, he has the potential to be your fifth running back that never makes your lineup, or your number one running back, no matter who you took over him. It just depends. And that's kind of the best ball format type of thinking. You know, let me take a guy that maybe over half of a season can give me RB1 production. I just don't know when it's going to be, and I don't have to worry about that in best ball. I don't have to worry about, okay, well, is this the week? Is this the week? Is this the week?
Right, exactly. And, you know, your best ball rankings are going to adjust accordingly. You know, you're going to bump up guys like that, like a Mike Evans. In redraft, Mike Evans is probably about, you know, late second round is kind of appropriate for him. But in a best ball, I'd be happy to take him 14th, you know, 15th, because he's gonna crush some weeks with the way that offense goes. So, you know, you'll bump him up five spots or so in your best ball rankings, guys like that. And, you know, the way to think about it, you're not gonna throw away the steady Eddies, guys that, you know, they score 12 and a half points every week. You know, they're just there. You know, the Brandon Cooks of the world, the Amari Coopers of the world, although Cooper had a terrible season last season. But, you know, he's not a huge touchdown guy. He just kind of goes out and gets his 6 for 60 when things are going right. Those guys have their place. You're just going to shift them down slightly. So, you know, maybe a full round in some cases, maybe a half a round, you know, for some of the better guys. But what you want to think about it is you're trying to get as many of the big weeks into your starting lineup as you can. So, you know, the classic comparison is you got player A and player B. They both score 200 points on the season. You know, player A has a bunch of 25-point weeks and then a bunch of 5-point weeks. Player B just has 12 and a half every week. Who's the better player? Well, in best ball, it's player A because in theory, you're going to have other players rotating through and filling his spot on his 5-point weeks. And then when he has a 25-point week, he's boosting your total. So you want to get as many of those in to your lineup throughout the year as you can. Even in 2X leagues. So, you know, we mentioned the MFL 2X league. You know, people go into that and they think, oh, like, this is a different payout structure. I should take a little bit more of a safe approach. That's exactly what you don't want to do. You still want to go after the boom or bust players. You want the spikes. You want the guys who are going to get into your lineup and score a crap ton of points. So that's a common mistake that people getting into the double up leagues will make.
To me, I think you kind of have to walk the line a little bit. Because, I mean, I have in my MFL 10, I took Kamara first round. Obviously, Kamara is going to be most likely a boom every week. I have Jordan Howard as one of my running backs. And then a few rounds later, I took Chris Thompson. Chris Thompson is one of those boomer bust kind of guys where in a season-long league, I'm still going to draft him, especially in PPR. But it's going to be harder for me to play him because he could catch 5 passes for 30 yards or 5 passes for 80 yards and a touchdown. So obviously in the best, well, I'm getting that benefit no matter what. But then you know what, if he doesn't, Jordan Howard is most likely going to get 15 to 20 carries every week. There's a 50-50 shot. He scores a touchdown. It kind of balances each other out. And then also with tight ends, I really wasn't happy with my tight ends. Like the tight end choices available to me. I took Trey Burton and George Kittle rounds 9 and 10 back to back. And then one of my last picks, I took Charles Clay, figuring if both of those guys bust, maybe I'll get 5 to 6 points a week from Clay.
Right, exactly. So yeah, you don't want to say I don't want to draft safe guys. You just want to draft them a little bit later than you're typically used to. So Clay is a great third tight end. Like I said, if you got a guy like Kittle who he figures to break out this season, he had some nice moments, but we just don't know. Right. You know, maybe he still struggles to catch up to the NFL game speed. You know, for me, all signs with him point to he's a beast and he's going to be a really good tight end and a pretty good offense. But we don't know till it happens. So, all right, let's jump in to our lightning rod of the day. And you know, we're hoping to do a series probably biweekly here with best balls and kind of update you on what's going on and some strategy. And we're going to pick a guy from each round every week. So this week is round one. And we got Julio Jones. He's had some historic seasons in the NFL. He's had some disappointing seasons in the NFL. Last season was a disappointment to most people who drafted him, typically between like picks 6 and 8. So I'm gonna open the floor to you guys, Colin. Do you wanna give us your Julio Jones take first?
Yeah. So I don't think I'm going to draft Julio Jones in a redraft league. However, in the best ball setting, which is what we're focusing on, he is someone that I'm going to be targeting just because we've seen over the past couple of years that he can have a 30-point game outburst and, you know, have 300 yards like he did last year and have almost three touchdowns in another game. I mean, he has the talent. It's never been about the talent. It's been about the streaky production. And in best ball, streaky production is still production. You don't have to guess. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to worry about it. I mean, if he gets you 30, great. He's your wide receiver one. If he gets you 12, well, maybe you have 3 other receivers that get you more and the computer sets it for you. So Julio Jones is going to be behind Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Odell Beckham for me. AJ Green is kind of close, believe it or not, and then Michael Thomas as well. But, you know, once you get past the top three, Nuke, AB, and Odell, it's who's your preference. I mean, there's Keenan Allen, who's going to catch a lot of passes. There's Michael Thomas, who's in New Orleans. AJ Green, who has all the talent in the world, kind of like Julio Jones, just doesn't have a quarterback that can get him the ball as much as we want him to. Mm-hmm. And then there's a fall off. I mean, Julio Jones is a lightning rod, like you said, Mike. He's going to be on a lot of winning leagues in best balls, is my opinion this year. And, you know, he's definitely worth the risk in the second round. I'm just not taking him over those top three.
What's your feel, Ray?
Yeah, I got to agree with Colin. I'm definitely not taking him over those top three. And quite honestly, there's a world that I could see Tyreek Hill, Keenan Allen, Michael Thomas going ahead of Julio for me too. I know it might not be the popular opinion. And then you have guys like Evans and Green, and then maybe Davante Adams to a lesser extent. Some maybe slightly concerned with concussions. But I kind of have Julio in that group of Evans and Green. A little more valuable in best ball. There's the health issues. There's the streakiness. He says he's staying away from OTAs or whatever, but he's going to be there when the season starts. So I'm not necessarily concerned about that. But maybe it's a little something else to keep in the back of your mind. They did draft Ridley in the first round. So Ridley obviously isn't going to replace Julio Jones this year. But maybe he cuts into the work. Maybe it changes things around a little bit schematically. The offense didn't exactly hum nice and easy last year in Atlanta. And it's the second year of the offense. So, I mean, I have some questions. Obviously, Julio is still a great talent. So if he's sitting there in the second round, depending on what you did in the first round, it's going to be hard not to take him. I'm just not sure.
Talk about a lightning rod, Ray. You might be the lightning rod, taking Tyreek Hill over Julio Jones. Are you crazy?
In a best ball with Pat Mahomes' arm? Yeah. I'm just saying. I'm not saying that I would do it.
We've seen flashes of Mahomes. And I know Tyreek Hill was a great best ball guy last year, but over Julio Jones, who has him by like 7 inches in height and speed, is probably actually pretty close to each other. I mean, I get in a best ball, but never over Julio Jones.
I wouldn't do it. It's something to think about, though.
Maybe yeah, on your nut pills.
I mean, those are both good points. For me, everything is about cost. If Julio, were in the same spot he was last year, I would say, there's players that are a good chance to outperform him. That's too expensive. But, both of you guys said you saw him going in the second round of your most recent drafts. I was seeing very similar, right around the turn. I actually took him at pick 11 in my most recent draft and paired him with Michael Thomas. The reason I'm in on Julio is touchdown regression. Touchdowns in the NFL are the hardest thing to predict. In fact, you can't. His career touchdowns starting, we'll work backwards from 2017. Last year, he had 3 touchdowns, 6 in 2016, 8 in 2015, 6 in 2014, 2 in 2013, 10 in 2012, 8 in 2011. Now, with the lower leg issues he tends to have crop up, I don't think he's going to probably have much more than that 6 to 8 range. I don't know if he's ever going to do double digits again the way he did that second season when he was just jumping through the roof. But 6 to 8 touchdowns with his 1,444 receiving yards, that's a much different story. That's why people were disappointed last year. So if I can get him at a slight discount, I'm more than happy to take the chance that Julio gets to back, gets to be around 6 touchdowns. And he edges right back into that like wide receiver 2 or 3 overall spot.
Now for you, Mike, would you handcuff Julio with a Calvin Ridley or a Mosinu?
I wouldn't go out of my way to do it. I'm never afraid to have multiple receivers on a good offense. The one that comes to my mind that I've done already is Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods. That offense scored a lot of touchdowns last year. Those are both pretty good receivers. Woods was the benefit of a lot of touchdowns. If he does that again, he's a nice pick for where I got him in the middle rounds. I took Cooks in the late third. If he reaches his potential and scores some touchdowns, he's going to be a very, very good third round pick. He could also, be frustrating, but it's best ball. So I don't have to worry about the frustrating weeks. I just have to hope that he's got some big weeks in store to go with Robert Woods. If Mosinu were falling a bit further than I thought he should, I'd pull that trigger. Calvin Ridley, maybe as a very late pick. We'll talk about this in a future show, but rookies are a very risky best ball proposition outside of running back. Tight ends are useless as rookies. Quarterbacks have a very hard time transitioning. Wide receivers, same thing. You know, we had that one really good crop with Odell and Mike Evans and a few other guys, and since then, it's been like bupkis. So I don't mind having, you know, a guy that you like and taking him very late. You know, if you really think Calvin Ridley is going to make a difference on that team, sure, go ahead. You know, but be careful with rookies is all I'll say on that.
Well, that's me. I actually think Ridley is sneaky underrated this year, just because of the fact that he played in Alabama, and we've seen Julio Jones come to the NFL level and just tear it up. And in Alabama, they run a pro style offense, but they don't really really showcase their wide receivers. And he has all the talent in the world. He's a great route runner. I took him in the 10th round. That's how confident I am in his ability. Now, of course, I'll back him up with some steadier guys towards later on in the draft. But, you know, if I can get someone with first round potential coming out of, you know, a top tier school, I'm going to take him. And especially with this guy, he was supposed to be the number one rated wide receiver. He went to probably the best place that he could go in Atlanta, just because of their offense. And I'm really excited for what he could bring this year.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think he's going to learn from Julio. I could see him coming on strong towards the second half, especially if Julio starts to get dinged up as he usually does. And another good point.
Mosanu isn't really healthy, you know, the bill of health too.
Yeah, he's a slot guy, but yeah, there's touchdowns to get spread out. But you know, good point, Colin, that he is a very polished route runner. He's 23, and a lot of people, you know, kind of scoff at that, like, oh wow, you're only getting to the NFL at 23. Like, there's guys, you know, who are turning 23 and they're coming into their year three. But you know, he's just going to have increased maturity. He'll have a better, you know, he'll have maxed out his stamina, his build. You know, obviously he's not a big guy, but he's been working at being an athlete that many more years, you know, a high end athlete. So his transition could be a little smoother than your typical rookie.
All right. So now Julio, you're saying that he had the 3 touchdowns last year. He'll get up to about maybe 6 or 7 this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's what last year Hill had 7. He had 75 catches. Julio, I got to keep this going a little bit more. Hill had 75 catches. Julio had 88. Last year Julio played all 16 games. Not sure we'll see him do that again this year. To varying levels, we're all somewhat high on Ridley. Hypothetically, if Ridley takes a few catches away from Julio, plus Julio misses a game or two, reception-wise, we're a lot closer to Julio and Hill. Maybe Hill adds another touchdown or two. So it sounds a little crazy, but I don't think I'm as crazy as I might say. I know this is the ramblings of a crazy person. But.
Yeah, if you keep referring back to something we talked about 30 minutes ago, then yeah, you're a little insane. But I'll bite. The one thing with Hill that I'm a little worried about is Alex Smith isn't there anymore. And I know that in the past that wouldn't be saying much, but he had a great season last year. And Patrick Mahomes is supposed to come in and light the world on fire and be the next biggest thing. But one of the biggest things for, you know, top college talent coming into the NFL, the hardest throws to make are the comebacks and the deep balls in the NFL. And he has the arm strength and Tyreek Hill has the speed. I get that. But he still has to be accurate. And we saw one game of Mahomes in the NFL last year. He looked decent, didn't show anything too crazy. And it's just a question mark. You know what I mean? It's a question mark that a lot of people are banking on it turning into something great. And we just don't know. If Alex Smith was there and if it was the consistency, I still wouldn't take him over Julio Jones, but in a best ball, I wouldn't be completely shocked.
Here's my concern with Kansas City in general and specifically Tyreek Hill. Matt Nagy took over play calling duties. realized, you know, the freak athlete he had in Tyreek Hill and said, we're getting this guy the ball. And Tyreek Hill obviously had a great season. Nagy's gone. He's in Chicago. Going back to Andy Reid. I'm an Eagles fan. I've suffered through, you know, a dozen so years of Andy Reid. He just has a frustrating play calling flow. You know, I don't know. Is he definitely taking play calling back? Are they, you know, maybe bringing in another mind? I don't know. But there's a question for me there. So I wouldn't discount Tyreek Hill severely. I have a hard time seeing him, you know, really outperforming his numbers last year, especially if that offense has any kind of regression. Guys, you there?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I lost you. Yeah. So yeah, you know, that's a good toss up though. I really like that. That's going to be interesting to watch and see if their ADPs do start to kind of get closer and closer, because, you know, the train is just going to build steam with Julio. People are just going to keep talking themselves out of him, and he's going to move into the middle of the second round, and Tyreek Hill could easily, you know, keep moving up as he's shown who he is for 2 years now.
Yeah, I mean, right now his ADP is 27, so I'm definitely looking like the crazy person.
It's not looking good for you, right? But it is early.
Although faced with the choice of Julio or Hill, I would probably take a running back.
Okay.
I will say this.
Next time you go to sign up for one, just let me know, and I want to be in the draft.
I will say this. After my second pick, the first guy I have tended to queue up is Tyreek Hill. He's never there in the third round for me, but he's that first name that all right, if he's there, I'm going to grab him. But that's just about as much time as we got. I want to give a really quick shout out to Scott Fish and what he does at fantasycares.com. If you guys are looking for a little bit more of a creative best ball league, go check it out. He does a whole bunch of best balls. You do a donation to Fantasy Cares. All that money goes to, at the end of the year or at Christmas time, Scott takes it. He buys toys for needy kids. A couple other things. There's some domestic violence awareness fund going this year. And, you know, Scott's a great dude, does a lot with the Scott Fish Bowl. This time of year, you're going to see it popping up in people's feeds. The best way to get into the Scott Fish Bowl is to win one of these best balls. They're going to set up with the same scoring. If you win one this year, next year you'll be in Scott Fish Bowl 9 to compete with, you know, 600 or so other of the biggest football fanatics in the industry, fans, analysts, huge names, fun people. It's a really cool thing that Scott does, and a great way to, you know, if you're not really concerned with winning money in a best ball, go ahead and get in the Fantasy Cares best ball with the entry into Scott Fish Bowl 9 at stake. So check that out if that's up your alley. Colin, Ray, thanks for being with me. Anything you guys want to plug real quick, Colin?
Yeah, you can find me on a couple other podcasts. Usually I'm with Ray on his Coon and Friends podcast, coming out once a week. I also do the Push Accept podcast and also the Dirt Dogs podcast with Mike the Rotocop and Randy Haynes. And you can find me on Twitter at CWeatherWax13.
Is Push Accept going to transition into the football season?
Of course.
All right, good stuff.
Of course.
I've been pushing hard to get a TGFBI trade done. I just haven't been able to do it. So we'll see.
There was actually one in my league last week. It wasn't with me, but it was Carlos Carrasco for Craig Kimbrell. So I mean, I get it if you need the saves.
Yeah, that's not too far off for me. Ray, anything before we go?
Like Colin said, we're on the Coon and Friends podcast every week. I'm also doing a baseball article every week for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. And we're starting up the football coverage on the site, I think, next few weeks as far as articles go. And I also write over at Roto Professor, and we're going to be starting our football coverage over there soon as well.
Yeah, football is here, guys. You're going to start seeing it, hearing about it. Don't fight it. Just start mixing it in. I know it's still the heart of baseball season, and you know, nobody's giving up on baseball, but more than ever, football is a year-round product, and you can get a leg up paying attention. So look for us in probably about 2 weeks. We'll have another episode out here, and we'll talk some more best ball. All right, take care.